This is the March 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our special guest for the day is Kerry Siparath. He's with the U.S. Grains Council in Washington, D.C. Kerry Siparath serves as the Senior Director of Global Programs for the U.S. Grains Council. It's a nonprofit organization that promotes the global use of U.S. barley, corn, sorghum, and related products, including ethanol and distillers, dried grains, and solubles. In this capacity, Siparath is responsible for oversight of the Council's 10 international offices and all worldwide programs. Kerry, thank you for being here with us. Can you tell us a little bit about what those responsibilities across those 10 sites might be?
Sure, and it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me today. As you mentioned, U.S. Grain Council, we deal in the export market promotion of feed grains, corn, barley, sorghum, and their co-products. And we have, brick and mortar offices in 10 different locations globally, as well as several full-time and part-time representatives in probably another 20 different countries globally. And so with that, it allows us to do programming to help develop markets and deal with trade policy and market barrier issues, as well as open up new markets, especially as we've moved into the ethanol side of things and trying to develop new ethanol markets globally. Plus the support that we get from our membership back here in the U.S., which includes all the major corn, barley, and sorghum checkoff entities, including Illinois corn, Indiana corn. And then we have an array of agribusinesses that are members of ours that help support us in that effort as well.
Wayne Nelson, do you have a question for Mr. Siparath?
Yes, I do, Todd. I was looking through the biography that they sent me that said you spent a lot of time in Asia in your, duties with the company there, with the business you're with. Can you tell us something about what you think is opening up to us and why the Chinese are coming in here a little more? Or is there going to continue to be growth, or is this a one-year thing?
Yeah, I've been with the Grain Council nearly 28 years now, and about 19 of those I've spent in four of our international offices. And so I did spend some time in our Beijing, China office, our Tokyo, Japan office, and then we have an office in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, that covers the whole Southeast Asia region. And I spent a couple of years in China back in from 2008 to 2010, but still work very closely with our staff there now. We're getting to the point where the China market is having to import because their domestic demand is calling for more corn than they have on hand. They've used up a fair amount of their stocks, and the whole COVID and even to more degree the African swine fever issues in China have pushed them to this point where they've had to make some changes. Specifically in the making food waste, restaurant, and other food waste illegal to feed because it was a way of a vector of spreading African swine fever. And so we estimate around 30 million tons of food waste that used to be fed predominantly in the swine industry, especially in kind of the smaller, a lot of people say smaller backyard operations. I wouldn't quite call them backyards, but smaller, feeding out 400, 500, 800 head of hogs. And so that moving that or pulling that 30 million tons off the market as they're trying to rebuild their swine herds coming out or coming back from ASF has really boosted that demand. And so we don't see it as a 1 year. We think this is a long term going forward. you know, whether, you know, we're now at over 22 million tons of corn sold to China, whether we're going to see that kind of level year on year, that's hard to say. But I mean, I think we're definitely in the point where China, at least for the next 3 or 4 years, will be importing a fair amount of corn from the global market, and hopefully a major portion of that from the U.S.
Kurt Kimmel, a question?
Yeah, it seems like you talk China, corn and beans, you know, take top priority and so forth. What about sorghum, barley? There's some other grains we can fit in there over the near term or long term, you think?
Definitely. We've been selling short of, you know, we had 2018, and where China actually started an anti-dumping case on U.S. sorghum, and then into the trade issues that we had where tariffs put on, you know, soybeans, corn, sorghum, all kinds of things. You know, we're moving probably 6 million tons of sorghum this marketing year into China. It's probably over 90% of all our exports, and, you know, getting close to 75 or 80% of our total sorghum production moving to China. So right now, the biggest limiting factor of how much sorghum we can sell to China is how much will we produce and plant here. So feed barley is another big demand center that's, you know, pulling in into that feed grain side of things. U.S., you know, the barley production here has gone down. We don't necessarily have a lot of exportable supplies on the feed barley side of things, but China definitely is pulling feed barley out of Europe, predominantly France right now. A lot of Canadian barley going there, and then the Black Sea region. They have put an anti-dumping case on Australian barley, and so that's really slowed down the amount of feed and malting barley coming out of Australia into that China market. But just, you know, if you don't follow the barley market, you know, we saw Australia ship some malting barley to Mexico because Mexico was getting all they could from the U.S. and the French were selling barley to the Chinese instead. And so just how that changes that pattern. Or if you go up into Idaho today where you have some big dairy operations, the Canadians are moving so much feed barley out of Western Canada that it's pulling that feed barley price up. And you're seeing extremely high feed barley prices in Eastern Idaho where those big dairy operations are that will use some steam flaked barley along with corn to feed those dairy cows. And so just China alone, the way they shift things like that, and you see changing patterns even in barley trade globally.
Matt Bennett, a question?
Yeah, I was just, there's a lot of folks that seem a little bit, I guess, unsure about how much corn we can get exported this year. Obviously, we're talking 2.6 billion bushels exports from the U.S. so USDA so far. As of the sales this morning, our team came up with about 2.5 billion bushels in sales, and of course, we're only in the month of March. But I know a lot of folks have questioned whether we can ship out significantly more than 2.6. I was just wondering if you guys have any analysis or expertise on, you know, what kind of capacity we could run, because obviously the last week or two, we've seen pretty darn good inspections, and that's at a time whenever soybeans haven't totally dried up just yet as far as inspecting some of these soybeans and getting shipped out and whatnot. So I'm just wondering what kind of intel you might have on what kind of capacity we could run and how many bushels of corn we could actually export if the system was running full bore.
Yeah, and I'll try to, in my mind here, I've converted a few numbers ahead of time on paper from tons to bushels. But yeah, you know, we shipped just under 2.2 million tons or 86.6 million bushels of corn this week. You know, to hit that 66 million ton or the, what did you say, 2.6 billion bushels of exports. From what we've already shipped today, we need to be shipping about 1.5 million tons a week. And so, you know, we're above, we've been above that the last couple of weeks now. And so if we, you know, if we keep that pace for the rest of the year, we can easily hit that, the current number. We've even done some penciling in, what is it possible that we export 70 million tons? And so we'd have to do 1.668. So we'd have to do, we're probably talking, 90, 92 million bushel a week. Is it possible to do that? Yes. You'd have to have, near perfect weather, no logistic hassles. And we haven't had many other than things slowed down a little bit in mid-February with the deep freeze, but not drastically. You look at the vessel lineups, which I did here this morning, we're definitely set up to have a couple of big weeks coming up here. So at least in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think we'll continue to have big weekly exports on the corn side. As you said, the beans, it isn't dried up, but it definitely has slowed up, and that all opens up some avenues for more corn to move. But even looking at the vessel lineups, I saw there's a vessel, corn vessel expected to get loaded, I think, either over the weekend or early next week in the Texas Gulf. It's not something you see very often. We saw some soybean shipments when we were, shipping high amounts of soybeans back in December and January, being loaded out of the Texas Gulf. And I even saw a sorghum vessel that was scheduled to start loading in Seattle next week. And so obviously the guys that, look at freight spreads, rail freight spreads to move sorghum to Seattle or corn down into the Texas Gulf versus the normal channels of going down the river to the New Orleans Gulf or to rail out to the PNW ports. So as people look to keep moving what they have sold on the books, I think we'll continue to see people be more and more looking at ways to keep moving their products out. We even saw, I think it was 24,000 tons of corn shipped to Taiwan in containers last week. Taiwan's one of the markets where you'll see containerized shipments. A lot of that gets loaded right there just outside of Chicago even. So, everybody is going to be looking at ways to keep pushing corn out the door as we go through the rest of the marketing year.
I think we'll go on with another round. Wayne Nelson, a question from you?
Yeah, I think I was just wondering, China keeps changing their stocks number or adjusted them over a couple times in the past here. And, we just don't seem to know what their stocks really are. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, China actually doesn't even officially give out what their stock number is. It's a trade secret. Whether it's corn, whether it's wheat, rice, they'll tell you. They'll show you how much temporary reserve stocks they've auctioned off and such. They'll sometimes announce how much temporary reserve stocks they've bought. But to know what their true stock number is not that easy to, or is not reported. And so you got different people guessing. Most people would say USDA's stock number is too high today. I basically, since I've, even way back when I was working in China in 2008, I watch what our price is doing, because that'll tell me whether stocks are tightening up or not versus what either USDA is doing or other private are trying to guess what the stock number is. And, we see they've come down a little bit, but we've seen some very, very strong corn prices domestically in China that tells you those stock numbers have got to be tight. And China actually auctioned off some of their temporary reserves. It was 55.4 million tons of corn from mid-May through August last summer. And so even, that's equal to a normal U.S. export year, they auctioned off. And so even with that, we've continued to see very strong corn prices throughout the fall, winter, and now coming into spring within China.
Matt, do you have another question?
Yeah, I do. And I want to try to get this question framed adequately. But obviously, the Chinese put, I believe, 55, 56 million metric ton out on other government auctions. Most of that was gobbled up. I think every bit of it was up until the last auction. And we've seen and heard mixed comments. So we know the Chinese have been very, I guess, shrewd, trade partners. We know it's not always been the easiest. But what is your opinion on Phase One trade deal, and has it impacted some of the business that we've seen done, or is this just actually business that the Chinese were going to do anyway? Because obviously we've seen an extravagant ramp up in corn imports from China, or exports to China, however you want to say it. But I'm just wondering if you have an idea on this Phase One trade deal, and whether it's had an impact, or whether it's just been consequential.
I think, the Phase One trade deal definitely got things started off. Went into full effect a little over a year ago, so February 14th of last year. That allowed, China did not remove any of their tariffs, but that allowed for importers to apply for the most part, a 25% 301 retaliatory tariff. You could apply for that to be removed, and that's, from what we've understand, it's very easy to apply for and receive that. And so, the corn that's going in, the sorghum, even, beef, pork, dairy products, chicken, all of that is going in without having to pay that 301 retaliatory 25% tariff. And so that definitely is allowing a lot of this going in. That kind of kicked things off. Now I think what's seen is just pure supply and demand issues that's driving these much, much larger sales. And you have China has their tariff rate quota system that allows 7.2 million tons, of which 60% of that goes to the state trading entities, and only 40% of that goes to the private sector. And that's why the private sector goes out and buys sorghum and feed barley, because they don't need import quotas for those. And we've seen the state trading companies in China doing the majority, if not all, of this business that we've seen here lately. And so I guess you could argue, they may not have to pay the import 301%, the 301 retaliatory duty, because they are state trading, but it's being removed anyway. So I think the phase one really got things kicked off, and now we're just seeing supply and demand issues driving it now. Now what happens as we come to an end of phase one, which technically does end here at the end of 2021, and what happens going forward with that, that's yet to be determined. And we got the first meeting between the Biden administration and the Chinese happening sometime today in Alaska, although they're not going to be talking about tariffs and other things from what I understand. But what's going to happen at the end of 2021, and it always was supposed to be a phase two of the trade agreement, and how will that work, and will it allow these large exports to continue to happen? I think China almost, with the amount of soybeans and corn they're now buying, it almost has to work out, at least for, you could even throw pork in there. It almost has, some kind of agreement has to work out on the ag side of things.
One other thing too that's an important part of the whole grain equation is the ethanol. Could you maybe add a few points on ethanol demand here in the U.S. and maybe exporting ethanol?
I mean, ethanol demand here, obviously, through COVID, and the slowing down, the lockdown and the slowdown in gasoline demand has hurt domestic demand for ethanol. We're seeing that come back now. We're even seeing exports. The latest numbers, so the January export numbers were very good. Some of that with shipments to China. Ethanol is, that comes into the tariff issue, in that ethanol did have, besides the 301 retaliatory tariffs, which you can apply to have that exempted, ethanol did have a 252 retaliatory tariff, and that is still applied. That's a 15% retaliatory tariff, plus the 30% just flat import duty that China has on denatured ethanol. So you're paying a 45% total duty plus a, I think it's 11% value-added tax to import ethanol today. But we have, you know, there's been the number of the 200 million gallons that ADM announced here several weeks back. We're based on what we're seeing and hearing, that number is pretty truthful. And so we'll continue to see shipments of ethanol probably through June here to get to that 200 million gallons. What's happening is you have certain provinces in China that still have a ethanol mandate. You know, China backed off on their E10 mandate countrywide that they were going to go to, but they still have specific provinces that have an E10 mandate, and the government, the entity that oversees that has told the petroleum industry to make sure that they continue to do that. Ethanol production in China, because of the high corn prices, I can go out, if I have to blend, I can go out and import ethanol. Even with that 45% tariff, I'm probably not making much margin. But they are going out and buying that ethanol to meet that E10 mandate in those specific provinces, and that's why we've seen some of that ethanol business to China take place here. I think shipments started back in December, and I think we'll continue to see them several vessels go each month, probably through June even.
As a reminder, you're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our special guest this week is Kerry Sifferath. He's with the U.S. Grains Council out of Washington, D.C., serves as their Senior Director of Global Programming. Our other panelists for the day include Matt Bennett, Wayne Nelson, and Kurt Kimmel. Matt, I want to move on to the marketplace directly now. Over the last 5 days, on a rolling 5 days, ending Thursday with a settlement price, May corn was up 8 cents. However, the December contract, new crop, was down 15. That has widened things out considerably. I'm wondering what you're thinking about this particular move in the marketplace.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, some of these Chinese purchases, if you will, you know, obviously some people kind of knew this was the case and that this had happened. And we saw a fair amount of bull spreading going on, which we'd actually seen the reverse of that previously. So maybe some folks were actually unwinding some of that, first of all. Second of all, I think a lot of demand in the front months due to the fact that, you know, people knew that we were going to end up with these big sales hit the market. And then, you know, I always saw that kind of reverse itself, I guess, today. But certainly been interesting to see more demand on the front side than the back side, because we hadn't seen that for a while. But from my vantage point, as I go into the March quarterly stocks and planning intentions, I'm not so sure that people might be at least a little more friendly as far as stocks are concerned than what the acreage might have to hold. Now, I know that's a few days off, but I guess I've got to think that going into that report, if you're looking for any sort of bullish surprise, it'd be pretty tough to ask for it, you know, from the acreage standpoint. So I think it's going to be very interesting going in there. I don't know that you're going to see, you know, more of that bull spread action, you know, unless we do see more business in the short term. In fact, I would happen to think that this thing's just going to kind of level out going into the report, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Wayne Nelson, given the strong grain stocks figure that came out in January and the idea from much of the trade that the March 31 grain stocks report will also reflect strong usage, is there much in the way to fear from that particular report?
Well, I think, of course, you know, like I say, did we really, will they drop the number enough to keep the strong tightness of grain here? Will our carry out? We haven't lowered our carryout very much, you know, as to what we're doing. And we keep thinking that there's a lot of trade that thinks that should come down. The spread that Matt was talking about, that's counter-seasonal. Generally, this time of year, we start seeing that turn around and not be bull spread, but actually start to equal out. So, you know, trying to buy acres at this point in time and looking at things, I think our prices are high enough to buy acres in corn and beans now. And the one thing I think we're looking at also is that they're both money makers this year with your crop insurance prices and the prices we're looking at out there. So we might not look at the ratio as much, the corn-bean ratio as much in this year as we maybe have in the past, because both of them are quite profitable and farmers might just stay with their rotation or the grain they like the best to grow. And that generally ends up more corn acres.
Kurt Kimmel, if there are more corn and soybean acres, should producers be moving to protect the extra acres that they put into the ground?
Well, we believe so. You know, if you look at the price chart here, we're grinding sideways here, and some technicians can say we're recording a broad-based top pattern here, and if the fundamentals kick in, more acres and favorable weather, we could see some retracements back to the downside. You know, corn-wise, you can see this old corn drop back down to this 480 area, and these beans, May beans, could drop back down to 1204, and all that is just a simple 38% retracement back down. If we kind of break the uptrend and fail to hold here, the funds are technically heavy technicals. When the green line crosses the red line, they buy. When the red line goes below the green, they sell. So with the increase of positions here, you know, we could be vulnerable here. And the simplest way to do this, and I know Wayne and Matt both have been promoting, you know, price floors, and that way if it's go down, you've got some coverage in here, and you still leave your upside open. And you want to leave upside open because the other technicians see it a little bit different. We've got a broadening top in here. Some view it as a halfway consolidation pattern here. So if you go off the low we made back last August and consider we're halfway to our highs, that projects corn over $8 and beans over $19.
Gary Sifferath, I have a question for you to follow up on some of the discussion we had about the export market. We have known for quite some time that the Brazilians in particular, but South America, in the soybean side, is world competition for the United States and actually raises more soybeans, certainly combined, than the United States does. However, the second crop corn, or safrinha, from Brazil has entered the marketplace as a major competitor, I believe. I'm wondering how you at the U.S. Grains Council view this year's competition and the late planting season that they have going at this time.
I mean, Brazil is definitely a strong competitor for the U.S. globally, and that safrinha, their second crop, which has become the major portion of their overall crop. You know, the late planting that we're seeing this year, which is in part, you know, some of these spreads you're seeing. Normally you start to see that safrinha crop getting harvested and being able to move into the world market for August shipments. Right now, there's a lot of worry about whether there'll be enough, if they'll have enough corn on hand to start shipping in August. And so that's some of the spreads you see with May to September or July to September is because of that, because we, you know, they think that Brazilian crop is going to be delayed and not really be able to deliver against a September contract for bids. And so we do see some Argentine corn now being priced pretty competitive against U.S. For June and July shipments, but not much out of Brazil yet, which means they'll definitely be real strong when we come to the fall. And if the U.S., if we ship back like we normally do to strong bean shipments in the fall, will definitely be a strong competitor. And then that the Black Sea region obviously is also a big competitor in Ukraine, and to a smaller degree, but still out there, Russia corn exports hitting the world market.
Wayne Nelson, as I was listening to those comments, I was thinking that gives any issues that the crop here in the United States might face in the June-July timeframe, a real ability to pump the marketplace higher. However, in the same vein, if the Brazilian crop is coming in late and won't be delivered until we're beginning our fall harvest, that sounds like trouble on the front.
Well, yeah, we don't want to have the harvest the same time. That's a That's not good, because then they can get from either one of us, and it drives both places down. One of the things that we've been looking at here is a December 480 corn put and selling a 520 call. And you can do that for about 22 cents. And so that would give you a $5 top if it went on up, and a 450 bottom coming down. And I think we want to do a little bit of that just before the end of the month reports here, just to have something covered.
Anything else before we get a final word from each of you?
Well, I got to give hats off to the TT trade. I caught Todd's trade. The old world vegetable oil markets, the soybean oil market's been a good trade over the last 3 years. Todd, I appreciate you pointing that out 3 years ago, my friend.
Oh, yes. Thank you. So that one did not come from me. That came from Twitter, but I do recall that vividly. So we'll be having to watch that one on the oil side to see what's happening in August, correct, as we get into the harvest there, palm oil. So we'll watch that one. Now let's get a final word from each of you. I think I will start, Matt Bennett, with you today.
Well, you know, we've seen awfully good markets in here the last few months. There's no question that, as Kurt said, you could see some really high prices this summer. So I encourage flexibility from producers. But we have to also be very, cautionary and not be in a situation where we just don't do anything. I know that sometimes we can get complacent whenever the markets are really strong like this. But, hey, you know what? You can lock in better profit margins at this time of year for new crop than what we've been able to do for 7 or 8 years. And so let's be proactive, but keep our flexibility. And I think we can have one heck of a year here in 21.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, your final word?
Well, beans tend to, they lost their momentum today, given the better South American weather and the rains going through Argentina. And the Midwest rains that we're seeing here today, we got too much here in Newmarket. But along with that, and then the NOAA's weather forecast coming on here. So we want to be just a little bit cautious here. I think we're pushing down on 50-day moving averages in the beans and coming down on some important points on a weekly close tomorrow. So there might be a little bit of downward motion for a little while here.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, Wayne and Matt, you both had some very good points there, and I think we got to keep looking forward here. We got big production, hopefully big demand, but rotten timing. These high prices and higher land values and stuff, and the far left taking over and raising taxes, it's going to be important to talk to your financial advisor and make sure you got your tax situation under control.
And Kerry Sifferath from the U.S. Grains Council.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'll just add, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about China so far today, but, you know, we're seeing real strong demand in other markets, in our typical big markets of like Mexico, Japan, Colombia, South Korea. And, you know, the Mexicans and the Japanese, even the South Koreans still have, coverage they need to buy yet in this marketing year. And we're seeing corn shipped, into Central America. We're seeing it going back into North Africa, even into Egypt, now into Saudi Arabia, seeing real strong DGS demand because of high global protein meal prices into Southeast Asia and such. And so while China gets a lot of the headlines, there is strong demand in lots of our other markets for corn and corn products.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org, or search out Commodity Week on your favorite podcast application. Places like Stitcher and SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and NPR One as well. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, and Kerry Sifferath from the U.S. Grains Council. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.